Welcome back for another episode of Talkin' Winter Ops. Whenever you mix snowplows, winter storms, and motorists on the same stretch of pavement, everybody needs to be at the top of their game in vehicles equipped for the conditions. Now, most of the time, folks get where they're headed and the roads get cleared without incident, but there are times when vehicles get tangled up with snowplows and the outcomes can be catastrophic. Every year, there are several news articles about snowplow accidents, and this year is no different. Now, agencies use public service campaigns like Ice and Snow, Take It Slow, and Don't Crowd the Plow to help raise awareness that snowplows are out there operating in winter storms, but it seems like that just isn't enough. On this episode, we're going to be visiting with Jed Fahlgren, state maintenance engineer for the Minnesota DOT, to find out what they've been doing to help reduce the number of interactions between snowplows and motorists, right after this. The Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program and Season 7 of Talkin' Winter Ops is here because of the support from AASHTO's maintenance community and state DOTs out there who make a voluntary contribution every year to financially support our program. Without the support from those states, we wouldn't be able to provide you with the resources to help you achieve your winter maintenance mission. So here's a special shout out to those states who continually support the Winter Weather Management TSP. And we've got Jed Fahlgren from the Minnesota Department of Transportation. How you doing this morning, Jed?
Fantastic, Rick. Great to see you.
Jed, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do there at the Minnesota DOT.
All right, Rick. Well, after a short stint with the Minnesota DOT in the early 90s as a construction engineer, I left and went into private industry for about 17 years, but returned in 2012 as a district maintenance engineer out of South Central, Southwestern Minnesota in Mankato. Worked in that job until 2019, where the opportunity when Steve Lund, my predecessor, was on a special assignment, I filled in behind him for a little while. And then in early 2020, at the kickoff of a pandemic, I became MnDOT's first TISMO director. Did that role for a couple of years or so until Steve retired and said, I love TISMO. It's awesome. And we'll talk about some of the things, in fact, today on that. But my heart is really within the maintenance community and working with that staff. So I'm just thrilled to be back in that role for about 2 years now. So.
Well, you know, that's a really good combination. You know, a lot of states have really gone this way of combining operations and maintenance. I mean, they really go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
You know, really when you stop and think about it. So, Jed, one of the things that we talked about, you know, before we got on was, you know, I had been seeing an awful lot of news articles so far this year about, you know, crashes with snowplow accidents. And, you know, I thought it was something that was really kind of unique about this year until I went in and I started doing some internet searching. And it's like every single year there's a couple of dozen news articles about, you know, folks that have gotten tangled up with snowplows, you know, and it seems like there's like a couple of common themes. You know, it's either they didn't see the plow. And I mean, it's, you know, on a bluebird day, it's like, how can you not see a snowplow? But, you know, when you get in winter conditions and you get the snow cloud and blowing and snow and all of this stuff, I mean, it is kind of easy to not see a big dump truck. And the other is, you know, people are just operating, you know, too fast or, you know, unsafe conditions around the plow. And I know it's nothing that's unique to Minnesota or really, you know, any snowbelt state. People get tangled up with snowplows all the time. And what we want to talk about today is what folks are doing to sort of help that situation and make people aware what's going on with the plow. So what are some of the things that you all have been doing? I mean, Jed, have you noticed like an increase or a spike in snowplow crashes recently? Or well, is it just something that is for you every year?
There is an element of every year. It's a part of the season. The first storm out, we start collecting the data on times we get run into, and it just continues on. Fortunately, in Minnesota, we've had a pretty mild winter, light winter, so it hasn't been as bad. But I can tell you on their first the first weekend out at the end of October, we had three hits within the first 24 hours. So indeed, plow hits are a far too common occurrence. And it's certainly something that we have done a variety of things over the year to attempt to address. We've not been successful in eliminating them, but certainly we want to do our best, you know, from a couple of perspectives. Usually, if these are, you know, small vehicles against our snowplows, the collision, we're going to win, where it's a bigger truck. And so the safety impact of the driver is certainly the first and foremost concern that we've got. But the other challenge we've got is you can have a crash occur, and then the compounding events after that become significant, because now all of a sudden that plow is off the road probably for a minimum of an hour or two while the investigation occurs. And if there's serious damage, that might come off the road for several days. Mm-hmm. And we have had actually plows totaled in crashes. And so that just changes your whole winter response. And so anything that we can do to reduce the impact, potential impact, even on our drivers. We have had drivers, when it's a heavy vehicle running into us, we've had injuries that we've incurred. And those are all types of situations that we want to tend to avoid. When you talk about trends, though, we are seeing an upswing. But for this light winter that we've had, we have been continually on an upward track. When they're in the range of what was normal to be 70 to 80 crashes in a year, last winter, a very difficult winter in Minnesota, we had over 150 times that we were writing up an accident report that involved a plow hit of some sort.
Yeah. Well, and you know, from a TISMO point of view, there's the initial crash, right? And you know, injuries that may have occurred with that, the plow's out of commission and so on. But you have all those secondary crashes that really impact the resilience of the system, increased delays. And of course, you know, when there's a crash and the plows can't move, it's like the snow just keeps falling, right?
Absolutely.
And that just makes things a lot more difficult, right?
Yep.
And it just, pardon the pun, it snowballs, right?
Nice. Touche.
You know, Jed, we were talking last year, I think it was, back at the maintenance committee meeting, and I had read about a project that you folks were doing there at Minnesota DOT to warn people or to give them some real-time warning about a snowplow operating on a stretch of pavement in front of them. And you know, so sort of stepping back, it's like, okay, is there a plow in front of me? And how do I see that plow, right? And so I think this real-time warning thing is really kind of an innovative thing. Explain to me how that works for you all there.
Well, the system you're referring to is we refer to as our travel alert system, which is actually the third generation of four that we're doing in Minnesota to provide some additional information to drivers. The foundation of that is actually in an old ITS demonstration project that we did back in the 2005, 6, 7 range near Detroit Lakes, Minnesota on Highway 10, 4-lane section of roadway, where we essentially had detectors and message boards on each section or each end of a section of pavement. And as a plow drove by that message board, we lit up the message board indicating there was a plow ahead. And then when that truck went outside, went beyond the next message board facing the other direction, it shut the system off. And that was just a kind of proof of concept of technology. And it worked well. Drivers loved it, appreciated it. And it really led into the next step that we did, which we referred to as our Wizard program. And there we took a much more heavily traveled corridor.
So before you go into that one, when you say when the plow passed the sign turned on. So was this the old vehicle to infrastructure kind of connection where the plow was communicating directly with the sign, or was there like an operator someplace making that happen?
The plow driving by would actually activate it. Now the details behind it, I'm not clear on just what we did to actually have those that or what turned those on, but it was not an operator that was doing it. It was simply the vehicle was letting the infrastructure know that it was there, and that turned it on, which has been general to all the systems that we're utilizing. Our second generation system, and that's where we installed a bunch of additional message boards along Interstate 94 between St. Cloud and the northwest corner of the Twin Cities metro area. Much higher travel, and we had some pretty good success with that system. It had its own built-in detection, again, by when the plow truck would drive past one, it would turn that sign on, leave that sign on for a period of time, and as it drove by each one of them, those messages would time out, and that was kind of the first or the next phase to it. And when it was working, it got great reviews and, again, great support. All of these the drivers are enthusiastic because, any level of support you can provide them, our snowplow operators, they're happy. They don't like the fact that there's often a target on their back. Uh-huh. And so they were excited about that. The real challenge around Wizard is that it was a standalone system where that portion of our RTS network was dedicated to the Wizard program. And as you take a look at these types of situations, you've got multiple players that may be in have a role in this, multiple parts of the agency that may or may not always have lots of connections. We actually had two districts that were involved in this. So troubleshooting became a challenge. And when it wasn't up and running, it was frustrating. And so we said, that's something that we needed to solve. And so that led to the Generation 3 piece of that, which was our travel alert system. This was also a neat.
Okay. So instead of saying, oh my gosh, this is too hard to work, you just embraced it and said, okay, let's make it bigger and let's make it better, right?
Well, or if you looked at it real time, you'd probably say we didn't get as good at Wizard as time went by and the system just slowly deteriorated. As whose responsibility is it to update the server? Who's going to be making sure if the server crashes, who's going to follow into that? And so that was kind of a lesson learned that we could make the technology work, but long-term operationally was a problem for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and if you can't keep it going, it's like, what good is it, right?
Exactly. And that led to a system or an innovative process that had been launched. We launched our connected and automated vehicle program within MnDOT. We had what was called the cab challenge, and we really opened this up for vendors to bring proposals to us any way, shape, or form that had something to do with and around connected vehicles, whether it was vehicle to vehicle, vehicle to infrastructure, all of those types of the pieces. And we had a proposal came in that was connected to this. And I got asked early on for some input and feedback, and our group said, hey, this is kind of cool. We like it. Here's some of the problems we've had on the first two. And one of the pieces that was really instrumental in this being a great success is that we know that we have two systems in our department that have a tremendous amount of support just naturally in them. And that is, if you take a look at our plow trucks, we have AVL in our plow trucks. We use that as our snow and ice operations in terms of understanding where trucks are at, understanding what kind of materials are being used, put down. So that is a system that, while not perfect, it is something that we know we're going to continue to maintain. So we say, okay, with that AVL system, we know where our trucks are at and where they're going, and we can figure that piece out. The other side we have is within our ITS world. We utilize Iris to manage all of our message boards around the state, whether that be in a metro area where we're looking at real-time traffic travel times. Outstate, we have them for sensitive areas prone to issues such as crashes, other messaging we want to do. So that infrastructure was in place, and Iris was certainly a very robust system that allows us to actually have messages that have different priorities. So we may have, you know, a cute message Monday sign that we talk about to, you know, remind people to buckle up, drive sober, all of those kinds of things. And they may be at one level, but then all of a sudden we have a crash that we need to report that back to drivers that are approaching the crash. That goes in a higher priority. And we know that, okay, that is going to be, you know, that's going to oversee and that or supersede. And that's the message we want to have. What we thought is that this type of what we could do is develop a system that kind of slides right in the middle there. It's more important than maybe the message Monday safety message. But if we've got a specific crash, we didn't want to interrupt that. And what was done by our consultant at the time, and they did a very elegant job of the programming piece, was to take the real-time information on our plows and where they were at. And we knew that we had message boards. Now, we decided to focus on the 140 message boards or so that are away from our urban core, those that are always displaying travel time. Okay. We said, you know, in a metro area, we have plow hits, but it's usually not because somebody wasn't aware it was there. There's some other contributing factor to it. So more likely to have those lower visibility conditions as we get further away from the metro areas. And so that was the message board that we were targeting. And we utilized, again, what I thought was a very elegant design by our contractor consultant is to say, you know where the message board is at. And so we can determine, let's draw a geofence around the area immediately downstream from that message board. And then not just draw one geofence, but we're going to draw, in our case, five geofences. And what we said is the idea, if you're driving to that message board and there's a plow truck ahead of you, we want to let you know if you're likely to encounter that plow truck in the next few minutes. You know, if it's going to be a half an hour till you catch up to that plow truck. So if it's driving close to your speed, we're only going to have that. In fact, if the plow truck is driving at normal speed, we're not going to light up the board at all. If it's slightly lower and you might encounter it, we'll light it up for the first mile. And if this truck happens to be part of a slow-moving maintenance operation, maybe it's providing traffic control for, let's say we're mowing the guardrail. We're going to let that, as long as that truck is within a five-mile stretch of that message board, we're going to indicate, you know, we played on different messages. One, and probably the one that we settle on the most, is maintenance vehicle ahead. We do have used plow truck ahead also, but maintenance vehicle seems to be supportive enough. But depending on what that real-time speed of that truck is, we'll turn on and off the message board. And the beautiful thing about geofences is if that plow truck enters a maintenance crossover on a four-lane freeway and turns around and goes the other direction, the message board turns off because you're not going to encounter that truck or if it takes an exit ramp. And there was a great deal of testing and playing around with different corridors that we were incredibly successful at. We anticipated doing testing for an entire winter season. And after our, you know, first couple of rounds and we dialed in things, we turned on all 140 boards around the state and it worked. It worked just fantastic. We really liked it.
So this system, first of all, IRIS, what does IRIS stand for? Is that like a homegrown system there in Minnesota? Or?
It's a system that's been used to, in the IRIS, I couldn't, again, it's one of those acronyms that we've got that I couldn't even tell you what it means. It's one that I know that we were critical in the development of it, but other states have taken it and actually perfected it. And we've taken, you know, what I love about our community is that we take find things and improve on them. And so IRIS is just what we utilize to do that communication with all of our ITS systems.
And this is a year-round program, right? I mean, you talk about all these maintenance vehicles. You know, when I think about the number of sweepers that get hit all the time, it's kind of a slow-moving operation. It's on the shoulder. You know, what a great way to give folks a heads up that they're likely to encounter something. And you know, it seems to me that a sign, if you put some kind of a warning sign up and people don't encounter the warning, it's like pretty soon they just blow it off.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And so having this phased approach, you know, whether they're likely to encounter a vehicle or not, I mean, it just adds to the credibility of that sign.
Exactly.
Or that message, right?
Yep. And so, and that was, you know, we had some great success, and that was actually a two-part research project. And the message boards lighting up was actually kind of that first phase. But we had a second phase in mind that we again went through, and it was the idea that we know where these 140 message boards are at, but across MnDOT's network of highways, we only have 140 of them. What is something else that we have? There's a much higher density, and much higher density was, and that where you potentially know location is that is of a cell phone. And so what we wanted to do is take the idea that, okay, if we know where a cell phone is at and we know where a plow truck is at, and we can estimate what their direction, what is their vector for each of those pieces. And if there's a chance that that cell phone is about to overtake a plow, can we provide an alert at that point too? And there are commercial vehicle or products out there that are doing something similar. What we wanted to be able to, again, is utilize our current AVL data and figure out, could we do this and make it work in a cell phone. Now, utilizing a cell phone brings up another set of concerns. We are a state that had just passed a hands-free law. So no, we don't want that cell phone in your hand. We don't want you looking at it. What we wanted was just a loud, audible alert that essentially said plow truck ahead. And that was a much more challenging system to design and develop. Again, they were successful. And we did it in some limited testing with, you know, putting a whole bunch of DOT supervisors and other employees that we knew were going to be traveling around in conditions. We were able to prove that the tech can work, and it does work. You can, and we could provide an alert to you probably within about 30 to 45 seconds of when you are going to overtake a plow. So you can make, you know, either the, you know, whatever decision makes sense for you at that time. It may be that it's just time to slow down and follow in behind. Maybe there is a spot where you can safely pass that, although that will be something I will never promote. But it's the idea of what awareness, what will prevent you from just slamming into the back of that plow truck. And so we were excited about that. We were able to do it. The contract came to a conclusion before we could do broad, widespread testing. And part of that was not only can we do the design, or the testing of a, can we do the operational design? What does that look like in the future? Are we going to build it into our 511 app? Are we going to divide, you know, work on an API that just feeds that information to somebody, you know, a Google Maps, or why, you know, some other application that would be a part of that. Mm-hmm. Part of that piece. So that system has kind of been retired, set aside, but what it does is it excites us that someday, at some point in time, if we can become a trusted provider of data to OEMs, you know, can we build into their safety messaging system? Is there something that we can do that can help there? So I hold out hope for the long term that we'll be able to make that happen. But unfortunately, today we don't have that in place.
Yeah. Now, Jed, when you were doing that with your maintenance supervisors, was this an app or something that they had to register for to get those messages?
Yep.
As opposed to like the emergency alert kind of thing where it blasts out a message to everything that's in the zone.
Correct. Yes. This was very specific. It had to be, it was an app that they would have on their phones. You have to have the app turned on and active. When you were, you know, so you had to be intentional about getting the alerts. So none of these alerts really came as surprises, because really what we were doing is saying, okay, it's a snowstorm. Let's go out with this app, turn it on, and we're going to chase snowplows down and see if we can
find a snowplow, right?
Exactly. And when we didn't get an alert, you know, we would know what happened when we didn't get the alert, and we, you know, come back to something and say, okay, yep, the ABL system in that truck was malfunctioning, or it was an older truck that didn't have it. And so once we could justify and say, okay, the reason we didn't get an alert because some other system failed, we really knew that we had something there that made some great sense. And so while I'm really excited about what we did, I'm most excited about what will be someday in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, you talk about connected vehicles and all of that. I mean, that was one of the things that came up at TRB this year is, you know, waiting for the OEMs to you know, buy in and all of this, you know, is kind of a slow slog, right? And then you have all of the older vehicles that are still out there on the road. Not everybody's going to transition over. But, you know, it's like 85% of the people out there in the U.S. have cell phone, have a smartphone, right? Yeah. And while your vehicle might not be connected, your operator certainly is. And it's really exciting to hear some of that, you know, work that you all have done to hook the vehicle up to the cell phone. I think that's really exciting stuff.
Yeah. And we wanted to be sensitive, you know, to think privacy type concerns. You know, we made sure when the app was developed that, you know, as you're imagining, you have a series of location information as well as speed information in order to determine whether you're doing it. And we didn't care where you were at before. We want to know where your last probably 5 to 10 locations are so we can determine what your speed is. If we know, if we're sampling that at a high frequency rate, and you know, once it's you know, 15, 20 seconds old, it's old news and we don't care and we don't need it. And right. So we want to make sure that because I think that's an incredibly valid concern that people have about, you know, Big Brother tracking. I mean, we have that same situation with our operators. You know, why do you have all that ABL data? But if we can utilize that data in a way that maintains your privacy, but also is a benefit for you, we know that there are people that will opt into that system and say, you know, I want to have that. I travel a lot. I travel, you know, my business is that of a, you know, maybe I'm a short route driver. And I know that even when the middle of winter storms, I still got to move the mail. I've still got to move the milk. I've still got to move whatever might be out there. Would they be wanting to add that to their safety package and connect with them? So there'll be other folks that we are sure that we will encounter down the road. And we want to make sure when those conversations come up that we can say, yes, we can tell you where a MnDOT plow is at, and we can tell you where it's going, and we can provide you data, and are happy to share in a way that we can make it safe for everybody on the highway.
Yeah. So now this system, this CAVEX traveler alert system that you've put together, when did that get stood up? You said you got started and it was just so successful. You just said, turn them on, right?
I want to say,
I love it when a project goes like that.
Exactly. I want to say, you know, COVID has messed up all of our timelines, hasn't it? But, you know, we were hot and heavy in it for the last 3 or 4 years. It's been going really well. And so until we throw a giant curveball in it during the summer of 2023 and said, we're going to change the way we do AVL in our plow trucks. And so that required a redo of the work that we're doing. And so we knew that it was possible. In fact, it was one of those things that was an expectation. Not only is it possible, but we expect that when we drive by these boards, we're going to light them up. So as we did that launch in 2023, we had to redo that software interface to figure out how we are going to, you know, send that communication again, starting in our plow truck to the message board that it just drove by. It's just that little electronic signal needs to travel through a lot of hands and a lot of places on the internet before it comes back. And so, I'm excited to see that, you know, with a little bit of a delay going into the winter season, we are finally up and running and that system is at full speed again. So, we're excited to see that, you know, it's one of those systems that we took a system that was performing well and replaced it anyway, because something else needed to be done. And that was a nice, between our first and second iterations of it, we didn't have that benefit. I'm excited to say that I think, you know, this is a here to stay thing. And we always want to keep in mind the idea that, can we somehow connect? You know, can we bring about the conversation I had with a very rural truck station on Interstate 90 back in 2013, where those drivers were just so frustrated by, you know, getting run into all the time. And, you know, can we just put a jammer out there that shuts off their stereo, takes over their podcast, shuts off their XM radio, does whatever to let them know, hey, I'm here, please don't hit me. And we found a technical way to, you know, we're getting close to that that point, and that's exciting to see.
Yeah. So you've gone through this refresh with the AVL and everything's working back again, what's in the future? You know, we talked about the cell phone connection and that sort of thing, but do you have like future plans for a next phase for providing these real-time warnings?
Real-time warnings, you know, we'll continue to let bubble the idea of how do we get connected to in-vehicle, whether it be a cell phone. That will continue to bubble forward. But there's other things that we, you know, when you're talking about plow hits, we know that we cannot just be one-dimensional in our response. And so beyond the world of an ITS-type solution saying we're there, what are some of the things that we can do that we have traditionally used to let motorists know we're there, but how can we do them better? So we recently launched a program in conjunction with our local road research board, which brings the local agencies within the state of Minnesota together, and with the University of Minnesota and their human factors lab to really put on a research program that looks at what are some things that we can do to better notify drivers. And that goes from any, you know, obviously we have lights. We've gone to flashing lights. We've gone to different colored lights. We've added the ability to have blue. We've lost the ability to have blue, and now we've got blue back on our trucks. But other states are utilizing green and white and different flash patterns. LEDs brought in these fantastic lights that can be incredibly bright, but they may be too bright. And they can they can bring actually chaos to a scene, as opposed to in addition to information. And so we want to look at kind of all of those things. What are things that we can do to you know, better inform the driver, whether it be our operator or inform the driver behind us that we're there. And so we want to be, that project has just gotten started in the last few months. We've done some literature review. It's really provided some, you know, interesting conversations already that we've had. And actually, we found a hole in that research project that launched a separate research project where we were talking about, you know, one of the things that we found that our plow crashes are not all just rear ends. We get sideswiped frequently. And whether that's sideswiped because you didn't see the wing or as you got next to us, you could lose visibility of where we're at. And so we are actually have a separate research project where we're doing more to light up even the perimeter of the truck. What are some things that we can do to light the roadway underneath us? You know, it helps us, our operators, see, but maybe that helps you see us better as you're going by. So we're going to continue. The cool thing about what's happening at the University of Minnesota in their Humans Factors Lab is that they've got a full-size vehicle sitting, you know, on the third floor of their building, in a lab where we can start doing some level of simulation of what's going on. So the driver can actually sit behind the wheel, and we can test various lighting situations. We can test different colors, different snowfall intensities, and just see if what kinds of things we can do that will impact driver behavior. And we'll mix that with the anecdotal stuff that we get from ourselves as we drive around. I mean, our drivers, our plow truck operators are following other plow trucks and some things that they want to look at. So we're going to continue to look at a variety of different things that we can, you know, do we adjust the flash patterns? Do we provide, you know, some of the cool things that our group was pretty excited to look at is a few years ago when Missouri's paint striping unit added the not only the visual alarms, but the auditory alarms behind some of their paint crews as drivers were approaching in too close. Do we want to do something like that? And Iowa's actually been doing some of that work also. So the idea is, what can we pull from all of these other conversations that are occurring to notify drivers, to let them know, hey, we're here. We've been playing around a little bit with some of our lane keeping research projects that we're doing, the idea of utilizing radar. And so not only we use front facing radar to make sure we're not running into somebody, but we've also used rear facing radar in an application where on a divided highway, but it was not a freeway design, but it also, so it had a lot of left turns, a lot of crossovers. And those things, those are areas that when we do our cleanup become a challenge because our plow driver is making multiple passes in that crossover to try to get it cleared up. And we will have vehicles approach from the behind and they may not see our plow driver may not see them. They get in too close. So we've actually done some things with trying to alarm our drivers to let them know, hey, there's somebody there. Now these are these are driver assist systems that are becoming more and more commonplace in our automotive vehicles right now. But the challenges around a snow plow is that those things become just caked with snow during the process. And so working through all of those pieces just become challenges for us and understanding how do you calibrate the sensors? How do you make sure you aren't getting false signals coming in if someone's in the lane next to you? So again, those are things that we're going to continue to work with to try to find ways for people to see us. And
you know, that human factors work is really interesting, you know, because, you know, during my time with the DOT, we sort of approached things like we're the solution, right? The solution all rests with us. When in fact, the motorist out there is a part of that solution as well, right? They're one of the three players that are out there in this mix. And you know it from the TISMO world. You know, you've got your network operators, you've got your maintenance folks, and you've got the motorist. And what any one of those three does impacts the other two. And, you know, bringing them into the equation and saying, you know, how can we provide you better information so you can make better decisions about this whole thing? And I know there's an NCHRP project working on real-time warnings and variable speed limits, for example, and they're putting people into simulators to see how well they respond to different kinds of inputs that we provide to them. So I think that's like the next big frontier is this area of human factors.
Human factors and then our ability to manage and process billions of pieces of information very rapidly are just going to, you know, allow us to have that much more information out there. And we're really excited. So, you know, what can we do from a technological standpoint, but what also can we do with the greatest technology that we have behind the wheel is that brain sitting in that driver behind us. How can we activate the brain, and keep it focused on the driving task and not on texting and whatever they may be doing, which that we feel that certainly has had a negative contribution to our increase in the plow hits. So what can we do to capture attention? So that's a kind of an exciting one. Another.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say another homegrown one that we're doing is it actually came out of one of those clear blue sunny days. The day after a heavy snowstorm comes through, the high pressure systems come up, beautiful weather, but the wind continues to blow. The road had been cleared from the snow, but wind is blowing and drifting snow back on. We're out in a day like that, plowing the left-hand lane of Interstate 35, and lo and behold, that truck is hit by a semi doing 70 miles an hour, takes both of the trucks across the roadway. Fortunately, vehicles were destroyed, but a driver walked away, but it really shook up our driver. In that season, in that truck station alone, everybody's plow had been hit. It's the intersection of two major rural freeways in Minnesota, and this is a group saying, hey, we got to do something. And one of the fun things that they came up with and we wanted to continue to push on was the idea of, you know, this was a clear blue day. My lights, you couldn't see my lights probably, maybe because it was just too bright out. But can we put some conspicuity tape? Can we put a chevron in the back of that truck? You know, they've seen them, you know, we saw them a lot around Europe on both snow equipment, but we've seen them on emergency vehicles. We're seeing their growth in emergency vehicles, ambulances here in the States. And so that group convinced their management team that, hey, we want to take ownership of this. We want to do this. And so they upfitted all of their trucks, you know, just a half dozen-ish, and they haven't been hit since.
Really?
That struck a chord with many. And so that's been a good, I want to say that was three winters ago now. And that's sparked increasing conversations to say, is it just lucky? or is there some value in this? And so what we have done is we've now, this last summer and fall, we have equipped approximately 100 of our units, primarily plow trucks, but some other special service vehicles, you know, small units that are maybe out there picking up trash, debris, roadkill, things like that, but outfitted them with those same chevrons on the back. And, you know, so far, so great. We have not had any incidences that will occur. We have all the, we've got all those units numbers recorded in our eSafe system. So if something were to happen, you know, that's going to trigger a review. Now, there'll be lots of conversation. You know, what are the right colors? What are the right patterns? Should we be using the chevron design? Should we be using maybe a rectangular pattern? So we actually have our Metro playing around with a couple of different patterns and a couple of different colors to see what might and could work. And so those are things that, you know, probably the larger efforts that we're approaching at right now. You know, we're going to continue to do the things that we've done. I talked earlier on the use of blue lights. We think is important in snow and ice. We want to be stay in good graces with our public safety group, and we will not add red. But certainly things that
they kind of own that color, right?
They own the red. They've acquiesced to letting us utilize the blue. But you know, I'm hearing great things from greens. Even whites in the right application, the white use, right usage. We're going to continue to look at those kinds of things. Simple things like airfoils on our lights to keep that, you know, these, again, we put LEDs on our trucks. One of the problems with an LED is that one of the
benefits,
don't make heat. And so, yeah, how can we keep it? How can we keep it off? So looking at that, one of the interesting things, and what we love to look over the border at our neighbors and what things are doing, and the state of North Dakota just did an ingenious thing where they lifted the plow lights off of the bed of the truck, put them a couple of feet up in the air, and now you're out a little bit out of the snow cloud. And so it's much easier. It improves the visibility. So that has actually moved to a standard part of our plow truck build. Another cool thing that we had, somebody on a tow plow took a white spotlight and just shined it directly up, vertically into the air. And, you know, it was like, what are we doing here? Well, when you approach that tow plow in a blowing snow condition, you see a column of white that lights up right above that vehicle. Mm-hmm. And it just, again, adds to that situational awareness for the drivers. And so those are things that we're going to continue to do. And as always, public education continues to be something we try to do, get people thinking about it. But at times that can be, seems to be an awful lot of words that are said for not a lot of impact. Although we do think that the Pathfinder program done as a part of one of the everyday counts, recent everyday counts efforts, has actually done a really nice job. We really appreciate the work that the National Weather Service is doing, not only to inform people about the storms coming in, but they're alerting today. We've got a system coming through the southern part of our state today, and you'll see it on their social media as well as ours. You know, safety messages around, just give us some room.
And a consistent message from everybody, right? I mean, that's what's so cool about the Pathfinder program is you're getting the same message over and over again by different agencies. So it doesn't matter, you know, where you put your trust, one place or the other, you're going to get that same consistent message. That's really cool.
Exactly. So we're excited about it. We know it's going to happen. Yeah,
so
we're going to do our best.
So, Jed, you guys are doing a lot of really cool stuff. What I'll do, if you don't mind, is I'll put your email down in the show notes. And if people got any questions about what you're doing ITS wise, TISMO wise, stripes, chevrons, lights, I know, you know, as well as I do, whenever you get three or four maintenance folks together, you want to kick off a good conversation, start talking about colors and lights and tape, right?
Absolutely.
It would be really cool if we could really pin down, you know, what really works. But you know, you get in a real congested environment, it's like what's going to work is what's going to stand out. You know, what you don't normally see will grab your attention, I think. And so there's a lot of really good stuff happening out there.
ooh, I think there's a marketing piece there. Like, since, you know, we want to be outstanding at what we do, we also want to be outstanding in where we are.
and so
people can see us. So
the wheel. Yeah. And hopefully not so they can take aim, right?
That would be certainly my strongest desire. That's, snow and ice seems to be one of the one things that the public still congratulates us for quite a bit. And we certainly know it if we're not doing well. And yeah. So it makes us do better whenever we're doing it.
Well, you know, mobility in the winter has become such a critical thing with the, you know, it's not only, can I get to the mall? Can I get to do my grocery shopping? But it's the movement of the commodities and, you know, this whole supply chain stuff. It doesn't stop just because the weather gets bad, right? I mean, we've come to expect our goods and services when they're promised, right? And that makes the role of winter maintenance just that much more important, I think.
Absolutely. And we can't forget that, you know, up in some of the northern climates, the world can't come to a standstill just because it's snowing. We're still going to, you know, we want to go to our hockey games, our basketball games, our wrestling matches. We want to be doing all of those different, we want to be visiting family. Those are all critically important things that why people travel, and doing the things that we can do to make sure that their journey ends up being successful and safe is a key part of what we need to be doing.
Right on. Excellent message, Jed. Excellent message. Anything else you want to throw in there? Or?
Well, you know, like you mentioned, I'm happy to have people reach out with questions, and even happier when they reach out with suggestions and new ideas for us to do.
Oh, right.
That's the best part of these connections.
That's what R&D is all about, right? Rip off and duplicate.
Bingo. Nailed it.
All right, Jed. Thanks a million.
Thank you, Rick. Have a fantastic day.
If you like this episode, share it with your colleagues. And while you're at it, click subscribe on your favorite podcast app. You can sign up to get all the Talkin' Winter Ops news direct to your inbox by clicking subscribe on our podcast website, talkinwinterops.com. Sign up today so you can get all the news firsthand. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at TalkinWO. Now, this podcast is possible because there are state departments of transportation across the nation that make a voluntary contribution to support the AASHTO Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program, formerly known as SICOP. It's because of their support that Talkin' Winter Ops and all the other resources we provide are there to help you achieve your winter maintenance mission. The contents of Talkin' Winter Ops are intended for general information purposes as a public service. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals alone. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by AASHTO, the Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program, or the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Until next time, thanks for tuning in and stay safe out there.